Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Tuesday the 20th of February. Today I'm joined by Christian Bland, who is a competition winner. Hi there, Christian. How are you doing today?
Hello, Peter. I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Clearly, I'm having problems talking today. But anyway, which story did you choose from today's Watson's Daily then?
So I've picked out the story on Anglo-American from the FT.
Yep.
Anglo-American is slashing the workforce in its platinum division, its platinum group metals division, by a fifth. This is very severe restructure. And while the article cited this in the context of a shift from diesel and petrol to electric cars, platinum group metals being important for catalytic converters in petrol and diesel.
Yep.
There are three other contexts that I think would be really good to discuss this in. The first being geopolitical and logistical issues in Southern Africa. The second being a wider move by Anglo-American in terms of how they're potentially restructuring the business and the potential for a breakup. And finally, also a movement by Anglo-American into fertilizers, which I think would be good to also touch on. So just starting off with the geopolitical and the logistical issues, this is very heavily concentrated in South Africa, the mining of platinum group metals. And there are two companies that are a huge problem. The first being Transnet, which is the state-owned rail provider, basically, which has which has essentially collapsed and left a lot of metals for Anglo-American stranded at their sites. But secondly, I think the one we really wanted to discuss was Eskom, which is the power provider in South Africa. I think it'd be really good to touch on the kind of the problems that they've had over the past couple of years.
Don't you mean the sometime power provider?
Yeah, well,
the occasional power provider, Eskom. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, when they feel like it, they do occasionally like to provide some power. There's been huge systematic fraud at Eskom for a while, and their former CEO estimates that $50 million are stolen a month from Eskom, which is just an unbelievable level of fraud. The CEO of Anglo-American, Duncan Ramblad, has criticised the corruption levels, the logistical problems in South Africa over the past year. So how big of a thing do you think this has been in this sort of a restructure in PGM for Anglo-American?
I think that, I mean, the thing is, though, okay, so I think that it plays a big part, but I also would say that it's been going on. Eskom, it's not like Eskom has been an absolute saint and then suddenly overnight it went evil. Eskom has been an absolute nightmare for years, you know, and this is why you've got so many blackouts, brownouts, you know, all sorts of things. It's an absolute nightmare. And then you've had all these CEOs coming and going, you know, coming in, trying to do something, finding that the corruption is so terrible that they can't do anything, and they either leave or they get kicked out. So yeah, I'd say it's a factor, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and when you look at what the former CEOs of Eskom say as well, it is absolutely staggering. So I think there's definitely a longer term issue. There's also been an issue geopolitically for the De Beers division of Anglo-American, that being another one alongside Platinum Group Metals that's really languishing for them. The Botswanan government, they have a new deal that De Beers has with them, which will basically give the Botswanan government a much bigger stake in the profits that are made from diamond mining in Botswana. Do you think there's any other factors here that might be weighing on diamonds?
I think for me the big sort of question of diamonds from my perspective is the potential future impact of synthetic diamonds. So from having you know, basically gone through the whole thing of proposing getting the diamond ring, getting the diamond. I actually went to get the diamond ring made, and then, you know, shelling out for it all. The prospect of getting a diamond these days, which has been man-made, doesn't involve sending kids down mines, doesn't involve environmental damage, bigger and cheaper, I would be thinking that's going to be, you know, that's what I would go for. You know, it ticks all the boxes. You're getting a better diamond, paying less for it, and you're not damaging the earth. So what's not to like from my perspective? But I know that other people will think differently. But my point is that if more people think like I do, then does that mean that the value of mined diamonds is going to go down? Now, I know that not all diamonds are used for rings, you know, they're used in machinery and stuff. But even so, it just seems to me that maybe long term, the diamonds may be maybe in decline. But what do you think that, or?
Yeah, I think when you say about the industrial uses of diamonds, I think that's really quite an important point to think about in trying to explain why they might have become, or why they might be going through a slump at the moment. Because when you think about the luxury market, especially for the higher end of the luxury market, which presumably would be the sort of types who'd want the traditional diamond, that did very well last year when this was going through a slump. So I think the industrial application must be a big reason for this slump. I'd also say on the geopolitical side, diamonds aren't ideal. A lot of them come from Russia, Botswana being the second biggest producer. So there's a huge problem in the diamond industry in identifying where the diamonds came from at the moment, and how accurately they can identify which ones came from Russia. So from a geopolitical perspective, I guess mining diamonds is almost a liability. So I think there is a very strong move, the rationale for a move towards synthetic diamonds, that for sure. I also want to discuss something else about Anglo-American, which is a sort of a broader thing in the mining industry, where there have been some pushes recently at companies for them to be split up into smaller parts. Duncan Ramblad, the CEO, said you can't shrink your way to greatness. Do you think he's right? Are mining companies kind of just holding on to as many different assets as they possibly can, or is there a sort of a deeper thought behind how they're structured?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think that mining companies, like many other companies, things just seem to go in waves, you know. So at one point in time, it's great to have exposure to all sorts of as many different commodities as possible, because you think, you know, maybe this particular commodity is useful in a new technology or something like that. So you want to have a broad portfolio. But then there are times when it's better to have more focus in your portfolio. And the thing is that, you know, I've seen this so many times over the years that, I mean, no one shrinks their way to greatness. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, at the end of the day, it all depends on what the commodity prices are doing, you know, and it's just, maybe there's an argument now for mining companies to perhaps focus a bit more. But in doing so, that means they have to sell assets. They sell assets, other companies have got to buy those assets. So the thought may be that they're concentrating on different areas. So it's almost, I say, not like musical chairs, but quite often these things, it's just shifting stuff around from what I see. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right about, and I think the musical chairs analogy is actually quite a good one within the commodities market. I think when we look at how they're structured, there was an investor in one of the companies that was looking at breaking up who said that they didn't want it to break up because they thought the different minerals that it mined were counter-cyclical. So they were shielded from a downturn in the market by investing in a bigger company. And I think that is quite a strong rationale, especially for a company of the size of of Anglo-American, it can offer a lot of diversification. I suppose with its share price at the moment, it's just a matter of being extremely unlucky that a lot of the stuff has just happened to go down at the same time.
Mm.
But I don't think necessarily being smaller would have saved it from that. Mm. Another thing to talk about, just a final one, would be the Anglo-American specific issue that perhaps explains why it's lagging some of its peers in its share price over the past year. Is this venture in Yorkshire, where they're looking to develop a new kind of fertilizer called Halite. Mm-hmm. This is currently only made by one company. Demand for it's very uncertain, but it supposedly has an opportunity to increase a yield by 3 to 5 percentage points over the current fertilizer. So it's a high risk venture, which they're splashing about 9 billion on. Do you think this is, what do you think this sounds like, a good venture? Does it sound like it could be a winner for them?
Well, I think that fertilizer generally is probably quite a good thing to be in. You know, I think that what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine is that suddenly we all realized how much grain, for instance, we get from Ukraine, but lots of other things as well. There has been in the last few years, I forgot whether it was then or around then, that there was a genuine shortage of fertilizer, because in the UK, for instance, it was some ridiculously large number, but there was only one. It was an American company, and it made fertilizer, and it was thinking about shutting down its UK operations, because to produce this fertilizer required a lot of electricity, and the electricity prices were incredibly high. And it was only when the government said, look, I've subsidize it or whatever, but they made them stay. So taking that forward, I do wonder whether countries, much in the same way that they want to be better prepared for in their defense industry, or they want to be, they want to be more energy independent. I think that, in agriculture, they also want to be able to produce more of the food that they eat. And therefore, I would have thought there would be more demand for fertilizer. And therefore, maybe this is a good thing to be in. So that's a long way of getting round to the answer that I feel that it is, in theory, it is a good field to be in, because it doesn't sound like there are that many players. And the ones that are there seem to have quite a lot of pricing power.
Mm. No, I agree. If this works for them, I think it's going to look like a genius decision. And there is definitely a movement in the United Kingdom at the moment towards more mining taking place. We could look at the lithium mine that was developed formal, and this being a mine that or a mineral that's been neglected for, that its existence has been known for a long time, but it's been neglected a lot. If this is to become a really important mineral, and the UK could become a leader in this, I think the government would be very keen to support it as a way to get jobs. I think it is also worth pointing out that ADM, the refiner come commodity trader, has placed forward orders for this. And the person in charge of it said, as much as I can produce, they're going to take. So there is definitely, there does seem to be some demand for this product. I guess it's just a bit of a black box in terms of thinking how much when it's such an untested product. And perhaps that's why their share price is lagging for more short-term reasons than secular ones.
Yeah, fair enough. Right. So I guess I'll move on to my subject today. So I chose the story, which comes from the FT. And this is about motor finance. Now, I know that I spoke about this a bit on the weekend with the weekly podcast with Ralph, but I'm just going to quickly talk about it again, because I think it's very important. It's potentially going to affect our banks, and not everyone listens. I mean, not, you know, not everyone necessarily listens to all of the, you know, the weekly podcast. So anyway, so this particular article, it says that, that it tries to identify. So, okay. So actually let's start with, so the whole problem is that, the FCA, so the financial regulator, is looking at how motor financing was carried out. So in other words, you go, you know, as a punter, you want to buy a car, you go to the dealership and you, along with around 90% of other new car purchasers, you want to do some kind of leasing agreements over a period of 3 years on average. And then they say, absolutely, come with us, we can sort some finance for you. Now the thing is that so in the past, so until 2021, when this practice was banned, so car dealers were allowed to set their own interest rates on repayment plans, which were known as discretionary commission arrangements, or DCAs. So this meant that they could either undercut the bank's preferred rate in order to get the business in, or they could set it above the rate to earn a bigger commission. Now, right this minute, we don't know how much the bank's exposure is going to be, but that's what the FCA is kind of working out now. The ones that are going to be most exposed are Lloyds Bank, Close Brothers, Barclays and Santander, because they may, if the FCA decides that something has been going wrong here, or, you know, mis-selling or whatever, then there's going to be payouts, there's going to be fines. And many people are saying this is similar to the PPI scandal that happened a few years ago. Incidentally, you know, don't take these things lightly, because in the PPI scandal, I did get a pretty chunky payment, right? So I don't know. I mean, I get the feeling that this scandal, although it's not going to be, or they say that it's not going to be as big as PPI, it is still going to be substantial. But what do you think?
I think it does echo PPI, as you say. We've got people being sold stuff at high rates, where it's not identical to the PPI scandal, but the interest rates that some people have been charged at, which are discussed in that article, did seem exceptionally high. There's quite a nasty conflict of interest potentially between the interests of the dealer and the customer. So I think this is quite a potentially a thorny issue, but I don't know how big it's actually going to become. We've got the FCA, this new post-consumer duty FCA, the consumer duty being something which has done a lot, but probably the most important thing it's done is introduced a requirement that if these financial institutions need to offer value to consumers or get value for money. We've seen them take on St. James's Place, an asset manager, quite aggressively on this. But this is harder, because this is a very retrospective application of the consumer duty. This is taking it to something that existed before the consumer duty and trying to apply it, whereas St. James's Place was about getting them to change how they were going to operate in the future. And this is a form of financing that has essentially been banned in 2021.
So I think
the impact will not be anywhere near as big as the PPI scandal. I think the impact on certain banks could be quite pronounced, especially Lloyds, where it was 3.1% of their gross loan book.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the thing, isn't it, really? At the moment, we don't know what the exposure is going to be. Historically, the amount that is payable is usually underestimated at this stage. So we'll see. I mean, one other thing that, again, I've forgotten whether I said this on the weekend, but just in case I did, I didn't. I do wonder whether the compensation costs, I mean, I've read sort of figures, maybe a grand, 1500 quid, something like that. You know, I wondered if this is actually quite widespread, whether lots of people are potentially in line to get payments of £1,000 to £1,500, in which case, you know, this could have some positive effect on the UK economy, because suddenly people, I would suggest that £1,000 to £1,500, for instance, is not a life-changing amount. And but it is an amount that you'd think, actually, I might buy this, or I might buy that, or I might spend it on a holiday or something. I mean, after all, that sort of amount is kind of ballpark figure for some countries like the US and Japan, for instance. That's what they did when they were trying to stimulate their economy as everyone was coming out of COVID, and saying, here is £1,000, £2,000, whatever, go and spend it and support the economy. So from that perspective, it does sound like a sort of an amount that might be spent. So anyway, I mean, I know that's another angle. We don't know how much it's going to be or anything like that. But, you know, having had the experience of PPI myself, I also wonder as well that, you know, people like Martin Lewis having successfully helped people to get access to that, he's pretty well set up to do the same again. So, yeah. But
I think that's a great point that you raise about the wider economy and the impact that this could have on it if there are lots of payouts. So I remember when the US were looking at student loan forgiveness, and there was suddenly a prospect of a lot of money coming back to people and then them going on a spending spree. There was quite a big debate between different people as to whether they were going to go on a spending spree, really fuel inflation, and just cause a massive rise in consumption, or if they were going to save, because supposedly people would normally save in a time of economic hardship rather than spend. So I think it is an entity that could actually be worth considering when we're looking at, if these payouts do go ahead, when we're looking at the inflation figures, and also the growth in the economy. I think it will be a really important consideration if there are large scale payouts.
Indeed. So there we go. Is there anything else you wanted to add on that?
I guess on the Martin Lewis front, he's done this before. I do wonder maybe whether we've seen a few times where people have repeatedly campaigned against something, and then the final time they might not have been successful. On the GDPR transfers between Europe and America, I believe that we're now on our third court case that's been introduced by the same person, but they're not expected to be successful this time. I just wonder if the Martin Lewis lawsuit might fall under that. I think it's definitely something to think about.
Fair enough. All right then. Well, look, thank you very much, Christian. Much appreciated. I really appreciate your input today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Peter.
No problem. And thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. So, keep an eye out for the new episodes. But thank you very much indeed. Have a great day. Bye.